Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Dr. Nick, the Incrementalist. Join me as I seek out the small incremental changes being applied in other industries that we can learn from and that can be applied in healthcare. Can these changes bring immediate value, but also add up to the big improvements and revolution we need in healthcare? Come along with me to explore the possibilities. My innovative guests from around the globe have used small incremental improvements to achieve their moonshot.
And today, I'm delighted to be joined by Phil Boshua. He is the CEO of No Labs. Phil, thanks for joining me today.
It's great to be here. I've been listening to your podcast and can't wait to participate in one.
So, if you would, tell us a little bit about your background. It's certainly diverse, a little bit unusual. How did you get to this point? We're going to get into what you're doing at No Labs and where you are, but what was your journey to this point?
It's been long, but I'll try and give you the quickest version I can. I made an app that was on the App Store on day one. I saw this App Store thing coming and I thought, that's going to take over the world and be amazing. So I stopped what I was doing, started making apps, and there was only 500 apps on the store that day. So I was very proud to have one of them. And then went on to make about 600 apps. But when that got a bit too crowded, I then discovered this thing called startups, which was, I was on a big country out in the middle of nowhere on the island of Australia, and I had never heard of startups, which sounds weird now. I was like, what, they give you money if you have a good idea? So I was like, I've got lots of good ideas. So started down that path, did a Kickstarter, which became, it was heading towards the world's biggest Kickstarter at the time. That was for a company called LifeX. And so I basically invented the smart light bulb, the light bulb you turn on and off with your phone. Then got Sequoia Capital funding with that startup. So that was like awesome. Moved to Silicon Valley to hang out with those guys and, you know, learn a lot from them. And then, you know, as startups go, like it got acquired. LifeX got acquired, so that was good. But I'd moved on just slightly before that happened. And then I went up to Seattle, met Ron Erickson, who was actually the founder of No Labs. And they were working with light-based spectroscopy, trying to find different analytes or different, you know, basically analyze substances using LED technology and be able to tell what they were. And he said, we're struggling to productize. Do you think you could take a look at our technology and, you know, see if you can do anything with it? So I spent 6 weeks with him looking into all that. And we decided to swing for the fences and try a non-invasive blood glucose monitor.
Yeah, so you bring that up. And, of course, that's like a huge deal. It's this massive leap. And to be clear, through the course of diabetes and monitoring of diabetes, we've learnt and understood more. We had, you know, very old technology. Then we had finger sticks, which was revolutionary at the time. You know, the ability to do that in the home. And, you know, now even continuous glucose monitors, and I've experienced them, but they are invasive because they essentially insert a needle into you. They've gotten some technology. But you're talking about a whole revolution around this, which is non-invasive. For the benefit of those folks listening, help people understand how that's even possible, because it seems like it's science fiction. And I know science fiction becomes fact, but we're not quite there yet.
We're getting close on this one. Yeah. No, I mean, what's there's a saying that, you know, new technology seems like magic at first. And, you know, I agree with that. Like, I know how it all works. So it's not magic to me, but we basically use the same type of phenomena that light-based devices use, like an oximeter or a heart rate monitor or anything that has a little pulsing LED, like on Apple Watch or Fitbit. It's the same idea, but what I figured out was if you can do all that with light, you can probably do it with radio waves. Because for those people, I don't want to get too techie or sciencey here, but if people understand the electromagnetic spectrum, light is the same thing as Wi-Fi. It's just a different way, speed that the wave goes up and down. Right. So exactly the same thing. So I was like, if you could do all, you know, monitor what's going on in the body in light, I just had a hunch that you could probably do it with radio waves. So I went out and bought a bunch of equipment, spent about 6 months testing, experimenting. It was a lot of hard, long hours. But we finally started to get triggers, what I call triggers, for blood glucose using radio waves. So then we just further developed it, and are where we are now.
So you're right. I mean, the spectrum is exactly that, and we visually see a very small slice of it. There are, you know, different ends, and obviously X-ray, as an example, is in one of those ends, which has potential negative effects. You're in a different spectrum. You're in the radio frequency, the same as we use. I'm guessing, since I don't know, but and I'm not suggesting it's in FM or AM, but for people, you know, intellectually to think about it, it's in the radio wave spectrum that we're bathed in at this point. Is that true?
Yeah, absolutely. It's very, very safe. I mean, we could spend 5 or 10 minutes talking about the safety, but I mean, that's up to you. But it's, we've done all the testing. It's very safe. To wear our device for 24 hours is about the same as a 5-minute browsing on Facebook on your phone. So we're very, very low power. And even cell phones, you know, if you spent 2 minutes on a cell phone, that'd be about the same as 24 hours using our device. So it's so low, because our device only has to go 2, 3, 4 inches around. So it's very low power.
Yeah. So I mean, I think there's lots of varied information around the safety, and that really wasn't the purpose of sort of making that analogy, but just to sort of understand that spectrum. And you've taken a slice of it, a safe slice. If you were doing this with X-ray frequency, then that would be a different safety issue, but you're in a different set of the spectrum. But you're essentially, if you're taking those radio waves, you're projecting them into the interstitial cells and then picking up the reflections. Is that what's going on?
Yes. It's we have a transmit antenna and a receive antenna on the device. And just imagine it's the size of a watch. Then what we do is we transmit, and that goes into the interstitial fluid, or basically everything, the blood, everything. And then we get a receive signal. We can tell how much energy is hitting our receive antenna. And then what we do is, at certain frequencies, very, very specialized multi-frequencies, it's actually quite complicated, we can see different molecules. A good way to explain it, at certain frequencies, it will resonate the molecules, and then you'll get like a peak resonance at very, very specified frequencies. It's similar to when you run your finger around a wine glass, when if you have the right pressure, the right speed, and a certain amount of wine in the glass, it'll start to vibrate, and, you know, it creates that sort of singing noise. So exactly the same type of phenomena, except we're just doing it at a molecular level with radio waves.
Right. And for those of us that do that, and, you know, my family is constantly irritated by the fact that I'm actually quite expert at it with almost any glass. One of the things that you notice is that you get the concentric rings in a circular glass of the harmonics from whatever the frequency is, based on, you know, those metrics that you describe, which it sounds like you're picking up based on the individual molecules that you've targeted.
Yes. Yeah. It's the molecules and the effect that those molecules have on your body. So we can basically see changes in the body by how these radio waves are interacting with, you know, your body. And then glucose is just one frequency set. So we've had successful tests on blood alcohol consumption, like alcohol consumption into blood alcohol. We've used aspirin and Tylenol as a proxy for other metabolized drugs, and we can see the effects of both of those things. Oxygen is really easy. Like if you have your hand or arm on the device, then and you hold your breath, we see it, the oxygen, you know, we see you deoxygenate, and then when you take a big deep breath, we see it come back up. So, but each molecule is a different frequency set. So it raises the question,
and before we dive into the continuous glucose monitor, which is really the focus here, it seems like this is an obvious next step, but you can target multiple molecules. You're essentially opening up a whole new avenue of what I would call continuous monitoring of molecules within the human body at some level. I don't know if there's some limitations based on the projection of those radio waves, but it's essentially open season. Is that true?
Yeah, that's a good way to describe it. Yeah, it's exactly what we're doing.
Wow, that's really exciting. So let's talk about NoLab. So you came to this, you had your connection with Ron Erickson, as you described. You focused on this. Was there a specific reason that you focused on glucose, or was this just that was where he was? Tell us a little bit about that journey.
Yeah, Ron was sort of dabbling in the technology and trying to sort of further the technology using light. And then when we decided, because he's, you know, his pitch to me, I guess, was can we productize this somehow? And then I actually started looking at counting calories, the intake of calories non-invasively in the body. That was something that was very meaningful to me. And then what we figured out is, well, carbohydrates turn into glucose. So we actually, for a few weeks, we're going, okay, well, we'll just use glucose, you know, as our sort of proxy, or we would have to extrapolate out because you need fats and proteins as well to count calories. But anyway, we sort of went down that calorie counting path using glucose for about 2 weeks. And then I still remember the moment vividly, Ron and I just basically looked at each other and went, why the hell are we doing calories if we can do glucose? Like literally it was staring us in the face for a few weeks, and we went, yeah, let's just do glucose and just be laser focused on that, even though we know we can do all these other things as well. It's a big market. I think if we can get non-invasive, easy monitoring of people's blood glucose levels, I think we can genuinely help improve the impact of diabetes on the world. So that's what we've been doing the last 4 years, is just glucose, glucose, glucose.
So for those of you just joining, I'm Dr. Nick, the incrementalist. Today I'm talking to Phil Boshua. He is the CEO of NoLabs. We were just talking about the journey to the point of this continuous glucose monitor using essentially a radio frequency approach to analysis at the interstitial level focused on the glucose molecule. And you just pointed out something, and I think it's important to understand, this has not been, you know, an instant overnight success. Everybody sort of looks at these things, we see the success, but you talked about 4 years of development of getting to there. Can you tell us a little bit about the learning experience and what's gone on through those 4 years? What really gave you some inflection points to where you are now, which is, you know, on a clear trajectory to provide this continuous glucose monitor that's non-invasive?
Yeah, I took a leaf out of Edison's book. It's like sophisticated, smart brute force. So the story I know is that, you know, when he was developing the first light bulb, he went through 1,000 different filaments. And it's not, well, you don't go through, you know, I'm sure he didn't do it blindly, right? He didn't like think of 1,000 different things to test, line them all up. You know, you pick the first one you think might work and you use it and it burns out, and you analyze why it burnt out, and you've got some temperature sensor. I mean, I'm sure they had some sort of sophisticated temperature sensing, but however you approach it, you just basically choose the most likely path, rapidly test, and be very smart with your analysis, and you use whatever you learned from that to predict what you think might work next. But you really, really, like when I'm saying rapidly and brute force, like even like I had to design my own antenna because antennas aren't designed like, you know, like radio wave antennas, like even small ones that are in your phone or in your Wi-Fi router, they're not designed for this type of application. They're designed to send packets very efficiently. We had to actually on purpose create an inefficient antenna. So I went through 250 antenna designs. So each one I was testing, I'd make it, test it, analyze why it was better than the last one or worse, and then make adjustments on my next antenna design and then do another one. So I bought all this antenna design equipment and we learned how to do all that. And so I've got a box of about 250 antennas that we went through to finally come up with the antenna that we use now, which is basically helps us find all these things. So that's sort of an illustration of how I approach it. Then you've got the data science aspect as well, creating the algorithms. I had to set up all the infrastructure. We had to do custom code to read all the radio waves because we read them very, very fast, and we read a lot of them. So it's like that analogy of the antenna design to what Edison did is really just a way to explain my process. And I've done that with every aspect of this. Like inventing something, some people think it's like, oh, you've got to invent one thing. It's not really like that at all. You have to invent like 1,362 things to get one overall invention. Even test procedures, quality control, like everything, you have to basically start from scratch if it's true, innovative, brand new technology.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting you describe that. I'm always looking for themes, you know, the incremental insights. And what that reminds me of, if you've ever heard the story of the pencil and how a pencil is created. And everybody looks at it and it's this simple thing. But when you go back and track through all of the innovations that came to make up that simple piece of equipment, there are hundreds and hundreds of, you know, not only manufacturers, but all this innovation or insight that sort of contributes. And I'm always looking for those sort of insights to provide to others. You know, how do I achieve the same success? How do I get to that point? And it sounds like not only that process of failure that informs the next level of innovation, but it's the attention to all the little elements of detail that says, well, I'm not just going to take something off the shelf in this case, that drives, you know, the next step in that whole process. As you think about where you are now, tell us a little bit about the status. So, you know, there's information out there. We'll link to it in the blog post. But where is No Labs and where are you in the whole process of getting a continuous glucose monitor out?
We're like in the final throes of prototyping. Right now we can, if you were had your arm on our prototype and you sat still for 3 hours, we're well within FDA tolerances. Like our data is, you know, within FDA tolerance to have a non-invasive blood glucose monitor. But clearly that's not practical for people to sit on a bench for 3 hours in a row. So the technology is sound and it works, and we can find all these other molecules as well. So what we're doing now is we're doing deep data science testing and algorithm adjustment to make it so we can do the same thing in 60 seconds instead of 3 hours. But it's exactly the same process, same concept, same algorithms, but they just need refinement and adjustment. And then when we can do 60 seconds, realistically, we should be able to do 10 seconds, you know, using the same concept. But I just want to make it really clear that the 90%, even maybe 95% of the work was just getting it to work reliably every time. And we're technically at that now. So I look at it, it's like a, you know, it's the coat of paint on a car, really. The car drives, you can do that, but you can't no one's going to drive around with a, you know, a bare metal car because it'll rust in the first few weeks or something. So, but in my mind, it's pretty much done. We're just going to now paint the thing.
And that processing, that the time taken, is that a processing power? Is that a way of approaching the data analysis? What's the sort of the key to that?
Yeah, it's the amount of data we collect. So we can collect all the data over a three-hour test. When someone ingests some glucose, you know, we can see the rise from a baseline, sort of fasting state. We see a rise, a peak and a fall, and then a what we call like a tail off. So it's just you get all the data, and now that's easy for me to detect glucose non-invasively with all the data. Now I've just got to convert all those algorithms where I can just do it in just a quick slice. But it's all in there, right? Like if I can see all the data over a three-hour period, then it's in the data for a one-minute period or even a 10-second period. It's all there. It's just extracting that out. And what you've got to do there is just basically make the algorithm more complex and, you know, a little more refined.
Right. So you've clearly made huge amounts of process. You know, you're close to it, but, you know, still in the prototyping stage. You're going through testing, obviously thinking about the FDA approval process. What do you see? What are you excited? I mean, aside from obviously getting this out there, where do you see this going?
Gee, like so many different directions. I'll leave you with my big vision for it. I'm not saying this is possible, but I'm not saying it's not either. I'm very much stand on I have to experiment and see the data myself before I think, yes, we can now create a refined production version of this. But everything I've learned and read and researched would say that we can probably see white blood cells levels, all the different types. I think there's five different types, Ig, Eg, I can't remember a slip. But I did deep research on this about 2 or 3 years ago. And so if we can pick out different levels of white blood cells in your body non-invasively every 5 minutes, just say we did a white blood cell test every 5 minutes on you, I think we could radically change how people look at their at autoimmune diseases or symptoms. We would basically be seeing those levels change pre-symptomatic. Like before, and in my mind, like I know leukemia is often diagnosed or initially diagnosed through white blood cells. There's a lot of things. It's not like if you take a white blood cell test and say, oh, you have leukemia. It says, oh, these are off in this direction. Let's do further testing. So, you know, my biggest vision for this is to give pre-symptomatic early warning detection for cancers, other terminal illnesses, and even the flu, right? Like all of those things, we may be able to tell people they need to go to a doctor earlier. And I think the cure for cancer is early detection. I don't think it's a pill.
Interesting. I mean, there's so many sort of directions as a, you know, constant monitoring device. I mean, this is wearables on steroids for the potential for providing insights on an ongoing basis. We're moving to this medical home environment where people are coming out of hospitals or trying to keep them out of hospitals. And certainly from an aging standpoint, the elderly population is looking for better monitoring that can be achieved with a higher level of accuracy. So tremendous potential, you know, and quite frankly, a continuous glucose monitor that, you know, is non-invasive, you know, constantly providing data, I think is going to be tremendously exciting. That alone is going to revolutionize the space for millions and millions of people either diabetic or, you know, pre-diabetic that we see. So very exciting times. Unfortunately, as usual, I've run out of time. Just remains for me to thank you for coming on the show. Just very excited about the opportunities and the progress that you've made. Phil, thanks for joining me on the show today.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks for joining me today. Do you have any better ideas, or have you found a small incremental change that's brought about a big improvement in your world? Let's continue the conversation on our hashtag, TheIncrementalist, or share with me at DrNick1 on Twitter. You can find more information about the show on our program page at healthcarenowradio.com. And tune in next time to hear my discussions with leaders and innovators from around the globe who've revolutionized their space by using small incremental improvements to achieve their moonshot. I'm Dr. Nick, the Incrementalist, and I'm starting a revolution through evolution.